session number 1228, rule 3.
Mr. Braithwaite's reel 3. Did you make wills?
We had a rudimentary form of will provided with our pay books. But I don't think many people bothered because, as far as I remember, very few had much to leave anyway. I think I filled my will form in, yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you suffer many casualties on these operations apart from that South African you mentioned?
No. Very few, really, considering the conditions. I think the weather was probably the worst enemy. A number were lost on operations, of course, but, of course, nothing at all like the European theatre. We suffered lots of people out of flying for illness for reasons because of the conditions.
Any other incidents that spring to mind whilst you were doing these operations?
Well, I don't know if you'd like me just to mention the Japanese business, the incident that I spoke to you about.
What incident was that? You mean later on?
Yes, it was an interesting incident was that we were briefed to attack Japanese barges on the Mayu River on the 22nd of May 1942, and three aircraft were briefed. One didn't get off the ground. I suffered engine problems and had to turn back, and the third aircraft continued alone. They had been briefed to bomb at 10,000 feet, but because they were on their own, they attacked in a shallow dive bombing to increase their speed, and they were, in fact, attacked by five enemy aircraft. They shot one down and damaged another, and were themselves damaged and had to force land at Dum Dum because they couldn't get their wheels down properly, and the wheels undercarriage collapsed on landing, and they wrote the aircraft off. But the interesting point is that after the war, the pilot, through the Air Crews Association, made contact with one of the pilots who'd been engaged in that operation on the Japanese side. And he learned from that that they had shot the one down, and the one they shot down was the local air ace, and they had injured another pilot and damaged another aircraft, and a third one crashed on landing back at the airfield. As a further development of that, in 1989, we heard that this pilot and his friend were coming to England with a group of Japanese, and we arranged to meet them, and in the end we took them to the air display at Biggin Hill. They had an interpreter with them, and we exchanged notes on methods of training and operational flying, and were surprised to find that it was all very similar to our own.
So this must have been one of the first operations that you did.
Yes, it was one of the early operations, that one. Mm-hmm.
How long were you operating over Burma from these Bengal airfields?
Well, we left the front in Can you stop for a moment? We left the front in May 43, having been there for about a year, and we went back to an aerodrome called Yallahanka near Bangalore in southern India. And the intention there was to reform a new squadron with Hurricanes to go back to the Arakan to act as close support. They would, what they called the taxi rank system, they'd cruise above the battle and the army would direct smoke shells onto the target and they would go down and hit the target, hopefully. But we still flew our Blenheims a bit at Yallahanka, and we in fact went down to Ceylon with the Blenheims to stand by to meet an anticipated invasion by the Japanese fleet, which fortunately didn't materialise. I was posted from 60 Squadron to 62 Squadron in September 1945. 62 Squadron was flying Dakotas, and it was the staff flying organisation for an air landing school near Rawalpindi, a place called Chaklala. And there we trained Gurkha and Indian paratroopers, took them out jumping, formation jumps, night jumps. And we stayed there until January of 44, when we moved down to Jessore. No, to Camilla, I'm sorry, not Jessore.
With the same squadron?
62 Squadron moved down there for the purpose of supplying the West Africans on the Arakan. And the West Africans were advancing down the river valleys, as I mentioned before about the topography, and they had to be supplied wholly by air. There was no other way of doing it.
These are the West Africans with the Chindits?
African Division under General Slim.
Not with the Chindits?
No, not with the Chindits. No, these were the part of the army. But we were particularly involved with supplying them. And that was by Dakota, and we did it by dropping supplies, the things like rice and sugar and clothes and the soft stuff was dropped at ground level in double sacks. And the more vulnerable, heavier stuff like ammunition and rum and that sort of thing was dropped by parachutes. So parachutes were connected to a static wire in the aircraft, and when you pushed the parcel out, it pulled its own parachute and opened. They were dropped at about 300 feet. And the operation was that the people on the ground would mark a dropping zone with white crosses in the river valley, generally a sandbank, and we would go down to ground level and drop between those markers. And very often it meant descending 6,000 or 7,000 feet across the mountains down to this river valley and climbing out again. And quite often it took 10 or a dozen trips to get rid of the cargo because the dropping zones were so short. We had two launchers in the back, and we had a series of lights, and as we came up to the dropping zone, we'd put a green light on, and they would kick the stuff out, and then we'd put a red light on at the end of the dropping zone, and they'd stop, and then we'd climb up and go around again and come back and repeat it. And we carried 3.5 tons of supplies, and we were doing sometimes 2 trips a day, at extreme 3 trips a day.
And you could do this without interference from the Japanese Air Force?
There were occasional interferences, but very little. There was ground fire, but not a great deal. The main hazard there was the operation itself and the terrain.
Can you tell me from the logbook the places where you made these drops, please?
Yes, January the 7th of January, dropping at Popinjay, 5 Hurricanes Escort, 3 hours 45, that was. The 10th, Popinjay again, 3:15.
Popinjay must be some code name for some place in the jungle.
Placewood, yes, a dropping. Ramu, hour and 5 minutes. Popinjay again. Backen up. That's the name, I suppose, they gave to the thing. Hurricane Escort, that was 2 hours 45 minutes. Dropping Daletmi, 3 hours 10 minutes. That's 17th of January, 18th of January. Dropping Daletmi, 3 hours 15. 19th, Daletmi, 3:10. 20th, Daletmi, 3:20. Obviously, you'd be dropping at different places progressively as the army moved on.
Is Daletmi in the Arakan?
Yes, it's all in the Arakan. This is moving down the Arakan. Daletmi again. Okay. And that's on the 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th.
Of January,
yes.
44.
22nd, 24th, all at Daletmi. On the 4th of Feb, Paletwa supply dropping, 3:40. Shawa, Shawa, supply dropping, 3:30. Now, at that time, I had done 50 hours on that, and that completed my number of hours tour for the operation. So it was a combination of the Blenins and the Dakotas. I'd finished my 400 hours tour.
And then you're supposed to be rested.
Yes. Well, from there I went back to number 1 AFTU at Amada Road. That was near Calcutta, 100 miles away. And what they did there was to train bomb aimers and air gunners in formation control, bombing and firing control.
This is February 44.
Yes, this is February 44. I moved down to there. And we had every week a different fighter squadron in for fighter liaison practice. It was practice for the defensive formations against attacking aircraft, and it was also practice for the attacking aircraft on how to attack defended formation defences, because a single person in the lead aircraft would control the movement of the whole formation of aircraft and hopefully bring the most guns to bear. But the Liberator, we got Liberators later, and of course with those you had 16 guns. So it was quite a concentration. Anyway, initially there we flew Bisleys, which were a Canadian version of Blenheims, which was slightly more sophisticated, and Wellingtons. And then one day a chap arrived with a Liberator and taught us to fly it, flying Officer Scott, who was the instructor.
This seems to be May 1944.
This is May 44, yes. And the pilots there converted to Liberators, and we used those after that for the bombing and gunnery.
How did you find the Liberator to fly?
Very good, actually. Very comfortable. I had no trouble with it. It was most...
Did it have any vices?
It did, actually. It had a high aspect ratio wing, which means that it was very long and very narrow. And while that had very good lift characteristics, it was inclined by an aircraft stalls. I don't know if you know anything about flying, but if you reduce your speed too much, the airflow over the wings is insufficient to keep the aircraft airborne, and it stalls. Some aircraft sink down gradually and others go down with a bump, and the Liberator was inclined to go down with a bump because of this wing shape. The other sort of weakness about it was that it was a shoulder-high wing with a large body underneath, and the body underneath was just like a roll-top desk. Thin corrugated metal rollers move round to open the bomb bay, and then the bombs dropped out and you closed it again. But if you landed in the sea, the whole thing collapsed immediately, and the aircraft broke up. It was reckoned to be a bit lethal to try and land the thing in the sea. But the engines were reliable. It was economical, comfortable, good aircraft, I thought.
Did it come across very much as an American aeroplane?
Yes.
As compared with a British one?
Yes. You had, for example, sponge seats and armrests, and the intercom was a throat mic. I mean, we still, in the British aircraft, had the oxygen mask TR-9 type things, which were most uncomfortable. You couldn't keep them on in hot weather, and you had to put them to your mouth to talk, so you're always moving a hand all the time too. And of course, I don't think that our wirelesses were much good. The Americans seemed far better, the intercom. And we had headphones and earpieces instead of the helmet, whereas the earpiece, then, all of which in a hot climate is more comfortable. They were more advanced mechanically than the ones with Blenheims were old-fashioned, as Liberators were new, with all electric switches to control your engines and that sort of thing. Very good aircraft.
We didn't say anything about the Dakota to fly.
Well, Dakotas, of course, were a long-established airliner before the war in America. They were excellent to fly, Dakotas. A bit granny-ish, but extremely safe. And very great lifting power, so they were a good airplane. Well, after about a year, I think, I was posted from the advanced fighter training unit to long time there. It was at the end of 1944 that I was posted to 159 Squadron on Liberators, who were flying them operationally from a place called Digri, again about 100 miles from Calcutta. And there we were doing long-range bombing and mining trips, anything from 12 to 18-hour trips. And the Liberator was quite versatile. We used it for bombing shipping, and there's one here, Rajbury Bridge, bombing the bridge. That one, we were target lighting there. Martaban, that was 14 hours, 15 hours, Rajbury, and on the 17th of January, Martaban, rolling stock engine sheds and marshalling yards bombed. Photographs taken, 7 by 1,000 pound bombs, that was 13 hours. On the 20th of Jan, Moulmein, mining, 8 by 1,000 pound mines. January 23rd, Penang, mining. That, of course, was a Japanese submarine base in the World War II. Penang, which is now, of course, one of the more sophisticated holiday resorts. That was an 18-hour 50 trip. About two-thirds of our flying on Liberators there was night flying, and only one-third day flying. Victoria Point, mining, 14-hour trip. 30th of Jan, Rajbury Bridge, dive bombing. That was shallow dive bombing. 8 by 1,000 bombs. That was a 14-hour trip. February the 6th, Chomphorn Bridge, low-level bombing.
Was that in Thailand, or...?
Yes, that was down... that's down near Bangkok. That was 15 hours, 25. On the 9th of Feb, Khao Lang, railway sidings and jetty area bombed. 14 hours, 55, 15-hour trip. 13th of Feb, two railway bridges, MS-54, whatever that means, bombing. That was 13 hours, 25. 15th of Feb, railway cutting, dive bombing, 13 hours and a half. February the 17th, railway bridge, dive bombing. This actually was on the railway of death that ran from Moulmein at one end to the other side of Malaya on the other side. And we used to go along with general purpose bombs and sometimes napalm. If the bridge was built of bamboo, wooden structure, we would drop napalm on it to try and burn it. Unfortunately, of course, it was making work for the POWs that were building the railway. And the Japs used to site the camps near to the bridges, so everybody was extremely careful on those trips.
Were you getting any feedback from the results of the bombing on the railway?
Well, what used to happen as a rule was that a bow fighter would go along after we'd been with a camera and take photographs. The same with the mining. We used to mine at Singapore. Well, Singapore is very silted up, and the approaches are a number of channels which are regularly dredged. And if we were mining, we used to mine in the moonlight. If we were mining at high tide, all of the moraine, the delta, would be covered with water, and we would have to fly from a fixed point as a lighthouse down that we used to fly from at a set course, a set height, and drop your mines at intervals, 15 seconds, 31 seconds, and that sort of thing, and in theory that they would go in the deep channels. And in the morning, a bow fighter would fly over, long-range bow fighter, and check to see whether any mines had been exposed when the tide went down. And if they were, they'd shoot them up with their cannons to avoid the Japs picking them up. Feb the 20th, Tongo Airfield. 9 hours, runways bombed. 22nd, Victoria Point mining, 14 hours. 26th, Nagorn Paytham Bridge, dive bombing, 13 hours. March the 2nd, Makassan Railway Workshops, engine shed sidings and workshops bombed, dive bombing.
What was the Liberator like as a dive bomber?
Well, it wasn't a Junkers 87 type. It was a form of bombing which was developed to try to overcome the difficulty of bombing accurately with the Sperry bomb site. And Roger Demeter was just maintaining a shallow downward dive, and we found results more accurate in that way. It wasn't at a particularly low level or anything. It was just and then the 4th of March, Bangkok Noi Railway Station, we bombed. Now that night sticks in my mind because I was marker. I was marking with firebombs for the main force because we had to avoid anybody bombing a hospital nearby. And I flew down the main street of Bangkok that night, and it was all alight. And I could see a cinema advertising a film. I couldn't read Thai, so I don't know what was on, but it was quite interesting. That was to make sure we got the markers in the right place. Then on the 8th of March, bombing railway bridges again, it's 11 and a half hours. On the 11th of March again, bridges. 17th of March, Bangkok River mining, 14 and a half hours. That would have been down towards Bangkok again. 22nd Bangkok River again, mining 13.5 hours, and again on the 27th of March. Then at I was posted from 159 Squadron to 99 Squadron.
When was
that? Was in April 45. And they were stationed at Salbani, S-A-L-B-A-N-I.
Where's that?
That's fairly, again, about 100 miles from Calcutta. They're all in a ring around Calcutta. And that was noteworthy in that it had the longest runway. It had a 4,000-yard long runway. And if we were going on particularly long trips where we took extra petrol and our all-up weight was at the maximum, we'd go to Salbani and top up with petrol there and take off from there because of the extra runway length.
This was Liberators again, was it?
Yes, of course, with Liberators, I think we used to fly, take off at loads well in excess of the manufacturer's recommendations for all that weight.
Why was that?
Well, for the range. On this 4,000-yard runway, it was very often necessary to bounce the thing to get it off the ground. It was quite touch and go at times. But
how did you do that?
Well, you just opened up and went along, and then when you got up towards flying speed, you lifted off and touched the wheels a bit, and then in due course it would come off, and then you would stagger out at practically 0 feet for miles and gradually pick up flying speed and gain height. So that went to Salbani, the long runway for the Singapore trips were one of the longest. We normally carried 3,000 gallons of petrol in the ordinary wing tanks, but on those long trips we had an extra 500-gallon tank in the Bombay. And we took less weight in mines or bombs, obviously. And when we carried a Bombay tank, we used to have a bottle of carbon dioxide. And when the tank was empty, we would fill the tank with carbon dioxide so they could smoke on the flight deck. That was official. Smoking was allowed on Liberators, but not when you had a Bombay tank, until you'd emptied it and filled it with carbon dioxide. And again, April the 18th, Pechburi bridge dive bombing, 13 hours. 25th of April, North Rangoon supply dumps bombed, 8:20 hours. 27th of April, again, Rangoon supply dumps bombed. 1st of May, Rangoon gun positions bombed. 2nd of May, Rangoon gun position bombed. 20th, Chumphorn station and marshalling yards bombed. 22nd of May, Yi Railway bombed and strafed. Train, engine and two coaches derailed, engine punctured. Now that, those Rangoon trips, of course, were in support of the invasion and the retaking of Rangoon. And actually it was a bit of a farce, I gather, because when we got there, we attacked at the first light, and painted on the roof of the jail there was finger out, Japs gone. And I gather that the first army to land from the assault craft drove up in their jeeps, and there weren't any Japs there, so we had been bombing these people and